All right, hello, welcome in, everybody. A very happy Thursday afternoon. I'm Ben Kenny. This is On the Clock, Phillies 24/7 and Sports Radio 94 WIP. 2 weeks from today, the Phillies will open their 2024 season at home. 2 weeks from opening day. And that's going to play into a conversation about how somehow some free agents aren't signed. But it's getting closer. The weather's nice. I don't want to do the whole, like, oh, so happy it's this time of year bit and compare the months and, you know, how good sports are in different months. But I am genuinely happy. I woke up today genuinely happier than I was the prior day because of how close we are getting to the season actually starting. And if I'm being honest, I'm kind of sick of deeply following spring training storylines and trying to read into everything. I would love for the real games to start and for the grind and the day-to-day enjoyment of the season to begin. So that's where I am emotionally. I was at spring training last week. I'll get to a little bit of that. I mean, it was really cool. I had not been down prior. And then to come back and have the weather be nice, it does kind of feel like we've truly reached that threshold. Even though when the Phillies do open their season, it's probably going to be 40 degrees, rainy, sideways, disgusting weather. But today's nice, so that's what, you know, it's the mindset we're in. So I'll get to that. There are some storylines to talk about, although I am kind of growing fatigued with the super fringe roster stuff and want the season to start. There are some notable things that have gone down at spring training. We'll talk about that. There's some good, some bad. There's a big story that I need to shine light on because it's not one of the things that's going to lead talk radio. No one's leading a 2 p.m. drive time show talking about this guy, but I have to reignite this whole story because we have more roster projections. Just a lot of Phillies at spring training conversation to come. Also, the free agents that are still available, the pitchers, everybody's getting on their soapbox and clamoring the Phillies to sign one of them. You all know how I feel. I don't want to make one of those moves, but we'll talk about where those guys stand. And today is actually the day we will grade the offseason, officially. We're close enough to the season, and I'll add in a caveat if they sign one of these guys that's left. So all of that to come. There's a big blockbuster trade. There are headlines to get to. So a loaded show coming up, and glad you're with us. Again, Ben Kenny, Sports Radio WIP, and Phillies 24/7. You're probably listening to this on Friday, so you're under 2 weeks at that point. But, you know, March Madness starts, and this whole thing kind of sneaks up on people. I wanted to lead the show here. I was at spring training last week. It was awesome. The vibe down at BayCare Park, like Citizens Bank South almost. It was a party. Like, it's, you watch it on television when the games are actually available, which is another travesty that all of them aren't. And, you know, you kind of see just, looks like spring training. It looks like a minor league game between minor league teams. And you get down there and you realize it's like, it's literally Philadelphia. It is a large crop of Philadelphians that have made the trip down to party. And what, the French's in left field stays open like 2 hours after the final out. Like, people are down there to get hammered and watch baseball. And the baseball is a subplot of it, and that's fine. It's spring training. The vibe was awesome, and my dad and I went up to one of the other towns in Florida. Sorry, they're all pretty much the same in my mind, to watch the Phillies play the Rays the day before. And we get there in like the second inning. We watch Nola. Kind of gives up some runs, but that's okay. Again, we focus on the positive. He looked great his last start. We ignore all of the negatives in spring training. And we get up there, and it's like, it actually feels like minor league baseball. Like, I used to go the Madison Mallards when I lived in Madison, Wisconsin. Double A, I think, affiliate, maybe single A, of the Mets or the Yankees. Again, this tells you how close I was to it. Like, Pete Alonso played for them. They've had some players. But it's a low-level production in a pretty small town, or small compared to Philadelphia. And you go to the games, and yeah, there's somewhat of an event where people go to hang out, but mostly there's nothing going on. It's baseball, and that's it. And that's what this Rays deal was. It was like nobody was actually at the game, and then you go down to Philly, and they're selling out 13 grand, and it's a whole event. So I was overwhelmed, and overwhelmingly, I don't think encourage is the right word. Like, kind of surprised in a good way. I'm sure somebody can find a word for that. But you know what I'm saying. So that was great. And then, I mean, just the fact that we're sitting here with 2 weeks before the season, the fact that there's no big breaking news to discuss is a good thing. Like, I go to the MLB headlines, and at this time last year, Rhys Hoskins had torn his ACL, I think around this date. So that's what the, like, if there's news at this time, it's bad. The fact that there's no news is good. I'm not going to litigate Castellanos and Schwarber's struggles in spring training. I don't care. I know those guys. They might turn it around. It'll take until June for Schwarber, but that's fine. Like, struggles at the plate, struggles on the mound, that's okay. You go to the MLB headlines right now, and one of the biggest one is Yankees pitcher Gerrit Cole is out and out indefinitely, and that pretty much screwed their season. And these kind of things just pop up. Giolito, Red Sox signed him in the offseason. He blows. As soon as they took away the sticky stuff, he can't pitch. But even so, he's an important guy on their staff. Bang, Tommy John out for the year. It's like that kind of stuff that crops up, that is the issue. Here, with the Phillies, it's nothing. It's, oh, Brandon Marsh made his debut. He was 0 for 2. He called it the best 0 for 2 ever. He's healthy. There's nothing big to report, and that's good. That's my point. That's good. Obviously, there's the point of the continuity in the clubhouse from last year. And I would say the help that has going into the season, where, I'll put it this way, if the Phillies had made big offensive moves or big pitching moves, if they had acquired some big starter, I would kind of be reading into how he's pitching right now, at least a little bit. If they acquired big bats, I would care more. But the fact that it's the same team from last year that we know is really good and we know can do it, and we know gels as a collective group, then I think all of that kind of puts the performance stuff on the side. So my thought down at spring training was, this is great, this is fun. They're kind of into it when they're in the field, you know? Like, they're not totally into it like it's the middle of the season. You know, Castellanos is going through the motions. And you could kind of feel that in the park, but that's like everyone's there for the same purpose. Fans, players, I guess, that's my general point. Everyone is there for the same general purpose, which is to enjoy yourself. For the players, it's to adjacently get ready for the season. So there's no big news happening. That's a very good thing. As we, as the days count down, 14 days until the season officially begins. Let's, I want to hit on some of the good, though. There are some, if we are to go into the storylines, which I have to do, I have a show to do. Like, I can lead. If I was truly just the fan of the team, which I have been my whole life, I would just adjacently watch. I would read Matt Gelbin, The Athletic. I would follow the team as much as I could. I wouldn't read into all the storylines. I would leave that to other people. Now that I'm in the position I'm in, I'm kind of that person. So I do have some things that are sticking out and that are of note, good and bad. Let's start with the good. Number one, Brandon Marsh is back. I mentioned that. That's a huge deal. You kind of feel like when somebody gets surgery and then you hear should be back for opening day, that always kind of sets me back. Like, the timeline feels like it's always longer. Like, a pitcher's, oh, he's ramping up slowly. Okay, he's out a month. That's what it feels like it's usually like. And Marsh is back and he's fully healthy and he looks good and good. Like, all of that weird knee thing that he had to get done is gone and in the past, which is terrific news. And it sets you up for, and we'll talk about the Rojas thing in a bit, but it sets you up for Castellanos in right, Marsh in left or center, and Merrifield in left or Marsh in left, and Rojas or Pache in center, which, I mean, we talked last season, probably the best defensive Phillies outfield of my lifetime, clearly has a profound effect on the success of the team. And the success of the pitchers benefit greatly. Like, I've watched Rojas at the plate, and again, I'll get to that, but he made a sick running catch in Taijuan Walker's first start. It's just like he's everywhere, and he helps out the pitchers to that extent. So that's great news that Marsh is back and will 100% be ready in 2 weeks. Number two, this whole Zach Wheeler splitter deal that we mentioned at the beginning when Gelb put out his initial spring takeaways, adding a splitter to an arsenal that's already top of the line disgusting, and he put it in play against the Yankees, and oh my God, it is nasty. I'm not going to do the spin rate and whatever the numbers say about it. The eye test watches that pitch go. You're like, oh my God, how does anybody hit this guy? So adding another weapon, and again, he'll probably bring it on slowly during the season. It'll be like some days he feels it, some days he doesn't. but that feels like a postseason weapon. And maybe that splitters the difference when you get into, let's say, World Series Game 6. Again, I'm just creating an imaginary situation. World Series Game 6, up 1-0. Their terrible, embarrassing catcher just leaned into a pitch and got hit by one. Then a doink single that shouldn't have happened. Oh, it's first and third with no out in the sixth inning with Yordan Alvarez or a hitter like that coming up, say. Again, fake situation. Maybe that's a difference between Rob Thomson sticking with Wheeler, who now has this new thing to get out lefties. The difference between that and going to an Alvarado, which for Wheeler, again, already one of the greatest postseason pitchers of all time, add this to the arsenal and it gets better. So that's really cool to see. That was awesome. And that is when the season begins and we read two into April, which everybody will, Ben Schwarber, he sucks, all that nonsense. The Wheeler thing, I think, is going to be one that actually is tangible and we can actually get behind. So there's that. Mick Abel looks really good. Abel came in after Wheeler in this Yankees game. 2 strikeouts in 1.2 innings. He got Juan Soto. His stuff looks really good. And we talk about Abel and McGarry and these minor league arms that the Phillies finally have this young pitching we're excited about. And Painter, who's not pitching. But the collection of youth down in the minors and pitching, first of all, is value. The Red Sox have 15 shortstops. That's not good. You're not trading those shortstops for anything of note because you can go buy a shortstop for 10 mil. Look at the money that's going for pitching, and that tells you how valuable these guys are. So the Phillies have them, which is amazing. And last year, they couldn't really do anything. They couldn't help, but this year they will. They will be needed because of the organizational depth and Nick Nelson, who stinks. And you don't really want Covey and Turnbull starting games for you. So you want a guy like Mick Abel to come up and pitch. And he looks really good. And that was kind of a question entering spring. So they've sent him down to stretch out further and get totally ready for the season. But if there's anything pitching-wise that is really encouraging, it's the Abel thing. So there's that. There's also all this Michael Mercado buzz. Again, one of these righty relievers where they have insane amounts of depth. I'm in. Like, I'm not going to break down his spin rate or all that. But again, we talk about from the minors, because in order to get through a Major League Baseball season, you need about 8 to 9 starting pitchers, not 5, 8 to 9. Injuries happen, spot starts are needed, things of that nature. And you need, what, 15 relievers, if not more? So they have 7 really good ones, and I think is, you know, top 3 to 4 bullpen in baseball, especially if Kerkering can develop and look great. And then you add all these guys in the minors that can do it. That's the thing. If you are flexible and you have youth that is able to come up and get an out or pitch a sixth inning here and there, that's the depth you need to get through a season. So these guys performing well definitely is notable news. So that's the good. I don't really have, I'm not going to tell you about, like, Stott hit a cool home run when I was at the game, but whatever. I think Stott's going to have a really big year. Him hitting a home run doesn't really change that. The bad, though, Taijuan Walker pitched his first game against the Blue Jays last Saturday. Rojas made the big run and catch. Gave up some runs. I'm not really focused on the runs. Honestly, his stuff looked kind of good. The bigger part was his velocity was way down, like 4 to 5 mile an hour down. Miles an hour. Miles an hour. Mile an hours. Whatever. Miles an hour. That's the one. So he's clearly ramping up from the slow start at spring training. And I guess the thought is he could be ready for the season. I'm kind of starting to doubt that. If his velo's that far down, that means he's not built up. And we know how he is. Like, it's kind of nonchalant. I don't know the best comparison for it, but there's something where he's just kind of dinking around on the mound. And it's super, you know, he pitches fast. He has a clear, he has a brief delivery where it doesn't feel like he is as, I don't know the right term for this. It doesn't feel like he is as processed. Like, Aaron Nola feels like he goes through all these insane processes to get ready to pitch. Taijuan Walker kind of just feels like he's a physical specimen. He's 6'4", 6'5", 230. He could play linebacker. And he just comes out and throws a ball. That's what it kind of feels like. So part of that ramp up, I guess what I'm saying, for him, kind of just feels natural. He just needs time to get up there. And again, my expectations are pretty low for him this season, yet I do really appreciate the value he brings to the team, where he is on an $18 million contract. And if they're going to pay David Robertson $12 to $13 million, give me Taiwan Walker to give me 170 innings. He's a valuable part of the team. Expectations in terms of ERA and how he pitches are quite low. This whole bump in the road doesn't help it. That's what I'm saying. He's going to start the year on not the right foot, which, I mean, the fans are going to overreact. That's fine. He's on the roster. Get over it. They're not trading him. Nobody's going to take the contract. But he's still ramping up, which I think is generally fine. But if I had to classify it as good or bad, definitely leads into the bad. I would rather him be ready for the first day of the season. Johan Rojas is on a really bumpy ride. I'm actually going to save that for a second, but that I had to put in the bad. Oh my God, is this guy volatile? Like, if you're a chemist and you're into all that stuff, it was my worst subject in class. There's all these volatile elements and volatile liquids and things of that nature. That's what Rojas is right now. Guy's getting thrown out left and right after legging out hits. Like, his athleticism gets him on to second, then he gets thrown out at third. Or he hits this great single and then gets caught stealing. So it is a very bumpy ride. I want to elaborate on him in a bit, though. The other thing, Brogdon and Bilotti, two big members of the 2022 bullpen that went to the World Series. Brogdon was good, man. Brogdon was striking out Alvarez. That changeup was filthy. He was sitting like 95, 96. Bilotti kind of had some stuff. He was throwing well, too. They're looking really doubtful. Bilotti was already DFA'd, and he cleared waivers, so he's, I think, back in the minors. Brogdon just doesn't have that juice that he had a couple years ago. I would not even count on him to pitch on the Major League club this year. I think he had a bad year, as I'm known to do, looking up things on the fly, Googling in real time. Brogdon, 2022, he had a 3.27. He was good, and it was a pretty steady improvement upon, like, he had a 3.9 when he first came up, then a 3.4, then a 3.27. And then last year, he had a 4.03 in 27 games through 29 innings. But I think down in the minors, it was worse. I'm not relying on the guy to really do anything. And given the fact his velocity's down and his stuff isn't really there, nobody should really depend on Connor Brogdon to make the team, or Bilotti. They're looking really doubtful. But that's because it's deep. Part of that is because Michael Mercado, for instance, has been impressive and really good. All right, so that's the bad so far that I've observed and noted at spring training. Other bits of stuff. I think this is what the opening day lineup is pretty much going to look like. This was Monday's lineup against the Yankees. Schwarber DHing, batting first. Suck it, idiots. He's leading off. Trey Turner, shortstop. Harper. The bit that I can't really get over is Realmuto 4. But here's the lineup. Schwarber, Turner, Harper. Realmuto, Stott, Bohm. Castellanos, Merrifield, Pache, Wheeler. Now, Wheeler, obviously not hitting. And the Pache bit, obviously, subject to change with Brandon Marsh coming back. However, so the Schwarber, Turner, Harper's a lock. That's the top three. I would lean towards Bohm hitting fourth if I were making it. It all depends on how Realmuto hits. And something I did see down at spring training that I should mention, JT Realmuto is hitting the crap out of the baseball, which I've written him off a bit. I've started to begin to predict the downfall for him. He had a tough year last year. He hit like 250. And it's trending in the wrong direction, and he's getting older, and catchers normally don't sustain the excellence throughout their career. So he could still defend with the best of them, probably the best in baseball. Offensively, not there. He's hitting 286, which is okay, but it's more, again, the eye test says Realmuto is hitting the crap out of the ball. So if he's somehow hitting 275 and can hit four and knock in runs, love it, all in. I wouldn't bank on that happening. Again, I would put him down 7 or 8. Bohm is more my four hitter. And then I like Stott, and then Castellanos, and Merrifield, and Marsh, and Realmuto. But that's interchangeable. But that's what it feels like the lineup will be. again, with Marsh back, that changes. The big decision becomes the Pache Rojas Cave pick two of the three. I think that's the biggest storyline coming out of spring training. And that's why I wanted to elaborate on Rojas. My biggest story of spring training is not Wheeler Splitter. It's not all these young kids that can pitch. It's not Castellanos' son. It's not Rob Thompson being Rob Thompson and being a darling. It's not John Middleton saying he wants his effing trophy. It's not any of that stuff. It's the fact that I don't think Johan Rojas can hit. I don't think he can hit major league pitching. I think the evidence has told us that he can't. And listen, if he had been tearing the cover off the ball in spring training, the decision is made pretty easy. Then it's, okay, we'll bring him up if he's hitting great, and we'll live with the growing pains. But what the team shouldn't be doing is just having a pitcher hitting ninth in Rojas. His stats in spring training, 5 of 31. That is a 161 average. There's also a 161 on base percentage. He has not drawn a walk. His OPS is 419. That is terrible. He has one double, one triple, and seven strikeouts. That is a horrid stat line. That is a stat line of a pitcher. And again, I go into spring training and it's, the hitters are working on stuff and the pitchers are working on stuff. But a young guy like Rojas, no, this is like, it's kind of the proving time. This is kind of come into spring training and prove that you're worth it. Or prove that you're worth bringing onto the roster immediately. So they're working him hard as hell on bunting. Why would they be doing that? I don't know, because he can't really hit. Because they know that hitting ninth, they just want to bunt, have him maybe get on because he's fast, and then play good defense in center. I don't want that. Not because it might cost them wins in April and May. I'm cool with all that. I'm more thinking it because when it comes September and October and the time when he's needed, like in the playoffs last year when he couldn't come through with the bases loaded, I want him to be better. And the only way he gets better in my eyes is in the minors, is by having everyday at-bats against real pitching and not getting overpowered and embarrassed by major league pitching, which I think he will if they bring him up. So there's that. He's freewheeling on the base pass, which might just be something that the coaching staff told him to do. It was somewhat impressive. We're at the Rays game at spring training, and he hits a single, and he legs it into a double. The center fielder was playing footsie and lollygagging and didn't notice. And then the next pitch, he gets caught stealing third base. And it's like, dude, are you just going to be reckless? Is this just Harper does it, but Harper can do it because he is a generational player in every other phase of the game. Rojas is a generational defender. He brings nothing at the plate. So the decision is, and Matt Gell put out another roster, and all of the talk continues to be, barring something unforeseen, Rojas is the starting center fielder, which I just don't understand. I don't know why it's so beholden and that's automatic. Because Christian Pache has no options left, so if he doesn't make the roster, he's gone. And he's playing pretty well, and I like him as a player, again, similar to Rojas. The decision is Cave, Rojas, Pache, pick two of them. You're probably going to pick Cave because he's a lefty, and you want at least a lefty off the bench. Even though Cave, didn't bring them that much, maybe, again, David Dahl has this amazing year in the minors, and he comes up. But it looks like it's going to be Cave and Rojas, and then Pache's gone. I don't want to lose Pache just so I can get Rojas major league at bats in April and May. I would much rather him, again, be in the minors and get better and learn and come help the team when it matters in September. So that's, I think it's one of, if not the biggest stories of spring training that just really isn't getting talked about. That it's just, he's on the roster, great defender. They'll live with him at the plate. He's hitting 161. His on base is 161. His OPS is 419. That is terrible. It is horrible. And everybody seems to be okay with it, which, again, dumbfounds me. I am dumbfounded by it. And I'm not blaming. Matt Gell puts out his projection. I think it's based on information. I think he knows that he's going to make the team. It's more of a, this is what they're going to do, more of what I would do. Again, if it were me, he starts in the minors. But that doesn't seem like what the Phillies are doing. All right. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. We'll step away, come back. I want to talk Snell and Montgomery. There's your Philly spring training minute. Again, opening day 2 weeks away. I can't wait. I want to talk Snell and Montgomery for a bit and that whole situation. We'll grade the offseason briefly and then add a caveat for the pitchers. And another big move across baseball. We'll touch on that as well. Again, I'm Ben Kenny. It's On the Clock. All right, we're back. It is On the Clock. Ben Kenny with you today. I checked Twitter, and there are no new updates as of 2:35 p.m. on Thursday. I will say my Wisconsin Badgers just started their Big Ten tournament quest, which is, I don't believe in the postseason tournament deal in basketball. However, I will say it's kind of a necessary, well, it's a fun little intro to March Madness. So I'm half monitoring that. The players are going on. It's kind of one of those sensory overload sports periods for me where I'm following too many things and to an extent of, like, what is Rio Hitsitsune doing at the Players? Nobody knows who that is. Nobody cares. I do. But I say all that to say, I'm not really as dialed into the free agency thing as I should be, because normally it's done by now. Normally, we're not waiting until a week before the season for the former Cy Young winner and another top pitcher to sign. The fact that the NFL opens their free agent thing on Monday, or legal tampering, which is an oxymoron, and all of that gets done by Wednesday, and it's entertaining, it's exhilarating, it's interesting. You have got, like, it fosters discussion. Saquon Barkley to the Eagles, what does that mean? Kirk Cousins to the Falcons, did they pay too much? Is he too old, coming off an Achilles? These things are interesting to discuss. Meanwhile, baseball, Ohtani goes to the Dodgers, and he says nobody could talk about his free agency. So that happened. Yamamoto goes to the Dodgers. Again, it happened. They kind of discussed it. Not a really big deal. Nola re-signs with the Phillies. Bellinger gets slipped under the cracks. And that's it. That's literally all that it's been the entire offseason. Like, the pitch clock can save your product so much during the game, but when are you going to try to at least generate year-round interest? And the problem is, this rat Scott Boras, and I apologize for the severity of the term, but, I mean, he literally has a monopoly on the free agent market every season, and he tries to dictate it. And he's been kind of exposed this year for being an idiot because Blake Snell, who just won a Cy Young again, the AL Cy Young Award winner, or NL, excuse me, was Blake Snell, and Montgomery was really good on a World Series winner, they aren't signed because they aren't stooping to the depths that Boras wants the teams to stoop to pay for these guys. Insane quantities of money that teams just aren't going to give. And it's good they're fighting back against this guy, because he, in large part, is the reason that we're in this situation where it's March 14th and they haven't signed. So the big deal here, Blake Snell, Gerrit Cole goes down in New York. Huge news. Kind of derails their season. They get Soto. But now, I mean, you're talking probably the best pitcher in baseball ahead of Wheeler. It's him and Wheeler, 1-2. Best pitcher in baseball over the last X amount of years. He's out for indefinite periods of time. I should have looked this up. But I don't think it's the season, but it's a very long time, we'll say, I think. Reportedly, you can add to anything. And the next thought was, okay, the Yankees should sign Snell. They've already been rumored to, there's interest there. It's an easy landing spot to see him. He's kind of a D-bag, fits in New York, fits in that whole Yankees thing. His hair is already short, so there you go. Apparently, the story is the Yankees aren't signing him, despite Cole's injury. They aren't giving him this money, which I wonder who we need to look for this continue to be a problem, and that's Boras again. So that's happening. Montgomery, nobody has any idea. Nobody has a clue. So I've said endlessly that if it gets down to the point that we get really close to the season and these guys want a one-year, high-money deal, I wouldn't be angry if the Phillies did it. And that's still the case. If they want to sign him, I would not be angry if it's a 1 to 2 year deal with a lot of money. Now, the Wheeler extension makes it so in the future they are over the third tax line. So it would make more sense to make this monetary investment to not have the penalties for draft picks and things of that nature. It would make more sense for all that to happen next offseason. But that, obviously, we're talking right now. So if they do this, this just puts them over the tax and they have to pay the price, whatever. We care about what's on the field more than anything. And I'd be lying to all of you if I said that these guys weren't big improvement. At least Snell and Montgomery over, say, Taiwan Walker. So I'm open to it. I don't know what's going to happen because Boris has all this whole thing all tied up. So that's the update on the two pitchers that are left, that are somehow still left. 2 weeks before the season, and these guys aren't signed. Now, Harper, again, was late, but that goes further, at least the Harper thing, with Harper and Machado. Every single week, there was Machado visits the Phillies, Harper visits the Giants, Machado's out here, Harper's there, they're a favorite, mystery team, they are now, you know, toning back, they're offering this money. You know, that is actually, the news cycle is beneficial, and that at least had a news cycle. This does not. So, I will continue to monitor, and hopefully we get news on that soon. I did want to quickly grade the offseason, though. I laid out my perfect offseason, and I've copied and pasted these notes into every show doc I've done since doing this show back in November when we were crushed after the NLCS. And this is verbatim. I'm not pumping any of this up or changing any of this. I said, my perfect offseason, Aaron Nola for $6,180 or $7,200. I forget the number, but that's done, and it was pretty damn close. Next line, and try to get Wheeler extension done. That's done too. Or, this was in the event that Nola somehow left and went to the Braves, I would go in on Yamamoto. But as I've expressed throughout the offseason, the fact that Phillies were even trying and even offered and were in the discussion for him, I think is a big win because he was going to the Dodgers no matter what. So, I think all of that is a win-win-win, done perfectly. Nola's back, Wheeler's extended, they tried for Yamamoto. That's an A for the pitching side. I said, keep Castellanos. Everybody was reactionary after the NLCS. Oh, trade Castellanos. Swings at everything. Nonchalant in right. We need an upgrade. Trade for Trout. Contract sucks. I looked at it and said, you know, he's probably worth a lot more here as a player and a good player who kind of carried your offense for an extended period of time and wasn't the only guy to go cold. Remember, Turner stunk. There were others. Harper kind of disappeared a bit, even though he hit the ball well. But you know what I'm saying. I think Castellanos is worth a lot more here than he would be elsewhere. I think you're giving up prospects for someone to take the deal, which is hurting the Phillies more than anything. So keep Castellanos. They did that. Next, a productive platoon in left and or center field. I wrote down Jock Peterson, Tommy Pham, and Whit Merrifield. They got Merrifield. I would have been okay with Peterson. And you literally go one in, one out. But that wasn't the case. Peterson was offered a full-time job, which that was the thing the Phillies battled all offseason. It's like they could offer this money and a chance to win in a great environment, but they can't offer every day at bats because of how deep the outfield is, because of Marsh and Pache and, I hesitantly say, Rojas. So they get Merrifield. Again, I think they did well there. The only thing they didn't do that I wanted were bullpen moves. Hector Neris and Jordan Hicks. Now, Jordan Hicks, embarrassingly, was given a big deal, 4 years, $44 million, to start with the Giants, which I don't think that is going to work. I don't see that working out. But that takes, again, the Phillies out of the running for him. If he's offered a starting job, he's going to take it. And then Neris, again, I can kind of live without. I would have liked a Neris or a Phil Maton. My biggest thing was no Hader, which they didn't do. But again, we're kind of picking nits. We're kind of just going into the weeds and saying, well, you didn't do this well enough, even though it's already good. So I look back at they hit my perfect offseason pretty much verbatim. And I return to my grade, and I give this offseason an A. Not an A+, because, like, Harper's an A+. There has to be some level where they can reach. I think this offseason was orchestrated perfectly by Dave Dombrowski and John Middleton. They locked up Nola. Necessary. Keeps him away from Atlanta. And I love the guy. And he's really good. And he's a Phillies great. Two, they extended Wheeler. Also necessary, as we have discussed. They're locked in. The window's now. Now is when you win. They went after Yamamoto. I just shared my thoughts on him. You know where I stand. Moral victory on that. And then aside from that, like, would I have liked another good bench bat. Yeah, they got one in Merrifield, but maybe another one. But you look up and down, and it's about, was someone going to accept the opportunity? Again, we are kind of just going to the margins to criticize. But when you enter the offseason with a few big hundreds of million dollars worth of questions with Nola and Wheeler, and you get those done, and all is set up perfectly going into the year, you deserve praise. So I give them a lot of praise. A, on the offseason. Now, if they are to get Snell or Montgomery, it would still be an A. I'm not changing my grade if they go and get this guy. Now, could they be a Snell away from a World Series? Time's going to tell. I don't think so. It would help. I'm not going to lie, but it would still make, like, A means perfectly resounding success. You filled the holes. You did exactly what you needed to do. And that's what I think they already did. So if you give me a luxury, it remains an A. My grade of the offseason overall is an A. Now, there's the Michael Rucker. Like, if you really want to go down to the margins, okay, they got this Turnbull guy that seems like he could pitch. That's good, right? Maybe David Dahl can hit. I can name all these little relievers that no one's ever heard of and pose that as good news. But all that kind of plays into it. It's an A. There wasn't a foolish trade for Trout. They didn't make mistakes with Hader. And giving him hundreds of millions of dollars to be an a-hole in the bullpen. I think it just leads us into the natural thought that Dave Dombrowski, right now, is probably the best general manager in baseball. Like, you could be the Dodgers GM and fall into Ohtani and fall into Yamamoto and then get jobs the rest of your life for it. Awesome. But to be Theo Epstein, who takes over for the Red Sox, breaks their curse, takes over for the Cubs, breaks their curse, like a generational general manager, one of the best ever. Dombrowski is pretty much close to that level, and I think he has operated and approached all of this pretty much perfectly. So kudos to him, and I can't wait for baseball to start so I could stop just praising endlessly. You kind of naturally have to find something to be mad at. I will say, that's why I love baseball every day. That's why I love the manager decisions that you can, if they lose, you know, you're kind of, Rob Thompson, what are you doing? And you dissect it and you can go in a little rant. That stuff is fun. That's sports. I don't need to just pom-pom wave all the time, I will say. But all's good. All's good. As a fan of the team, I'm thrilled. I am. I will say, as a show host, doing the 47 minutes of Dave Dombrowski's amazing every day kind of gets a little old. It's still true. Kind of gets a little old. This is why we need games. We need games. All right, it's on the clock. Ben, Kenny. I'll talk about a big trade that happened in baseball and the other remaining free agents at the moment. And then what to watch moving into the week. That's coming up. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. All right. Ben Kenny, we're back. It is on the clock. Phillies 24/7, 94 WIP. On Twitter, at Ben Z Kenny, if you want to follow me there. You can. The Phillies are up 6-0 at the moment against the Red Sox, if anybody cares. I think I saw Edmundo Sosa had a hit. Schwarber, who's hitting 111, raised the alarms, is 1-for-3. Merrifield's actually hitting the ball really well. Again, none of this matters, but I'm reading stats because that's all we have. David Dahl just hit a single. He's 3-for-4. He's hitting really well, or 2-for-3. Hitting really well in spring training. That is a potential Jake Cave replacement if he pitches great. Ranger, 3 2/3, 5 strikeouts, 4 walks. Again, whatever. He's Ranger. He'll be good. Everybody is just so much better situated without the WBC like there was last year. Night and day. How screwed the team was entering the season last year, and how well positioned they are this year. Remember, they started like 0-5 or 1-5. They got swept in Texas. They start off 4-0. Bohm goes deep. It's like, oh, Phillies are back. This is going to be great. And then they get swept out because Nola ends up getting rocked. Story of April and May. And they get crushed in New York, and we're like, oh, this sucks. Can we start the season now? That's not going to happen this year. Everybody's much better positioned on the Phillies to enter the year. So let's do the big news of the last couple days. The White Sox trade Dylan Cease to the Padres. star pitcher Dylan Cease, who the Braves had been rumored were going after. Listen, the Braves were held back, I think, because Acuna's somewhat pouty and comes up small in big moments. And they have this weird front-running, like, they're front-runners, which is a bad thing. They're like, I mean, to be honest, they're kind of like the Celtics. They can blow you out and run all over you and go crazy. But then when you punch back, they kind of fold sometimes. And that's what the Braves are. But they lost also in part because Bryce Elder pitched Game 3 at Citizens Bank Park. And, again, Bryce Elder. Once Harper took Elder deep, that series was over. I don't care how close Game 4 could have been with Kimbrel and whoever. So they need pitching, and they get Chris Sale, which kind of feels like a Harper stopper move. They get that to try to mitigate Harper. And we'll see if it works. I mean, the guy hasn't been healthy for a full season in like 7 years, and maybe this is the year. Who knows? But they were really rumored after Cease, who was one of the hot young pitchers on the market, one of the best in baseball, and he is, as I look him up again, he is currently 28 years old. And I think he has a couple years. He's not a free agent until 2026. So you're talking 3 years of control. No, 2 years of control. 24, 25. And then he's a free agent in 20. Either 2 or 3 years of control. Whatever, semantics. You understand. He did have a 4-5 last year. But in 2022, he was 14-8 with a 2-2. Runner-up in Cy Young. Amazing year. Had a down year. So did the entire White Sox team. But you're talking one of the better young pitchers in baseball. And instead it's the Padres who go after him. They cut payroll by getting rid of Soto. And they go after Cease, but this kind of makes sense. Because if you're going to cut payroll, and you still need to improve, and you lose Snell after last year, and you lose Hader after going all in to try to win, and the only way to really mitigate that and go around it is to trade for pitching you can control and don't have to pay yet. And Cease is that guy. They trade their number 5 prospect, number 7, number 8, and someone else. Just like 4 or 5. Like, it's a big haul. And the White Sox need to do it because they're a disaster and they need anybody that can play. So this makes sense for the Padres. They still have talent. They still have Tatis and Bogarts and guys out there. They're in a really weird spot. And that's kind of the scare of being a small market team and doing what they did. Because they go all in with all these guys, including Snell and Hader. Then they lose, for whatever reason. They lose a lot of close games, which I will say is not entirely... I'm not going to entirely blame it on Hader. Part of it is the team and their DNA, and the ball just rolled the wrong way. I also am going to kind of blame it on Hader because I can, and I think he's a D-bag. So now he's gone, and maybe it's going to be actually addition by getting him out of that whole bullpen scene. But the Yankees missed out here. We talk about Cole going down and wondering what the hell the Yankees can do. Apparently, they were really in on him, and they're not going to sign Snell, and they didn't trade for Cease. So the Yankees' plan is now becoming increasingly questionable. The AL East is looking like Baltimore's in a runaway. Baltimore gets Burns, and they're loaded, and they have all these studs coming up from the minors. And the Blue Jays are good, and the Rays are the Rays, and they're going to win games with their devil magic whatever. And the Red Sox are an embarrassment, and the Yankees are kind of in the middle. They're kind of stuck, which is like my youth. Oh, my God, the Yankees being stuck and being in a bad place is a crazy thing to think about. And that's with Soto and Judge. Now, how does this relate to the Phillies? Juan Soto's a free agent after the year. And somehow, if they lose and he's not happy, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if that does happen, and that's the scene, and the Phillies have all this money, and they don't go spend it on Snell, and they're already over all the tax thresholds, Juan Soto next offseason. Again, putting out the little breadcrumbs. I would love the Yankees thing to burn, and burn spectacularly. Because if it works, I think Soto's more inclined to stay. Money talks. So does comfort and winning and all that going well. I hope it fails. I hope Boone gets fired. I hope they can't find pitching. I hope Soto hates it in New York because that place sucks. And then he comes here next offseason, and we just have the 2019 Nationals with Harper, or 2018 with Harper, Turner, Soto. but also just like the coolest team ever and one that dominates everybody, but not in a loser front-running way like the Braves do. All right. That's really it for free agency. I mean, Snell and Montgomery we talked about. J.D. Martinez isn't signed, but you don't really know what his value is. He's a DH. I don't really know exactly what's going to happen with, like, whether teams will actually value him enough. And that's that. I just looked on Twitter, and I was beautifully reminded. Again, I don't think anybody cares, but you know Wisconsin once lost a Big Ten tournament game 36-33? I don't know how anybody could have watched that stuff. I did. I don't know how anybody does. That has nothing to do with the Phillies, though. We will return. We'll actually get on track. And close out the show next. Some news about new jerseys. Phillies new jerseys. We'll talk about that coming up. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. All right, we're back. Ben Kenny on the clock. Couple more minutes here before we get out of here. And some semi-news-ish. Apparently the Phillies City Connects, and this is, I think, per Phillies Nation. Philly City Connects, this new jersey line that they took away our beautiful reds to put in. Remember the red tops? Game 5 in Arizona. They went out well. Wheeler dealt. Schwarber hit a bomb a million feet. Harper went deep too. The Philly City Connects are reportedly set to debut in April, and they have not officially released the jerseys, but there have been leaks, and the leaks led to intense blowback. Like, I hate the new Eagles lettering, but I can live with it. These new Phillies things, based on the city flag, which I'm from the city. I'm from Philadelphia. Couldn't tell you one thing about it. Apparently, it's blue and yellow. They are hideous. They're so far away from the actual identity of the team. And it's kind of a ploy to sell jerseys and make money, but no one's going to buy them because they're hideous, and they don't in any way relate to the Phillies. Well, reportedly, they're going to debut in April. So we get to feast our eyes. Maybe they'll release it and they're totally different. I kind of hope that's the case. I hope we bullied them into releasing something different. But who knows? All right, that is that's going to do it. Appreciate everyone hanging in, as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday as we are 2 weeks. It'll be 1 week next week. And then we'll talk after the opening day game as the Philly season begins. And I cannot wait, as I have clearly expressed. Cannot wait for all of that. Again, thanks for hanging out. We'll talk to you later. See ya. All right, Ben Kenny, we're back. It is on the clock. Phillies 24/7, 94 WIP. On Twitter, at Ben Z Kenny, if you want to follow me there, you can. The Phillies are up 6-0 at the moment against the Red Sox, if anybody cares. I think I saw Edmundo Sosa had a hit. Schwarber, who's hitting 111, raised the alarms, is 1-for-3. Merrifield's actually hitting the ball really well. Again, none of this matters, but I'm reading stats because that's all we have. David Dahl just hit a single. He's 3-for-4. He's hitting really well, or 2-for-3. Hitting really well in spring training. That is a potential, actually, potential Jake Cave replacement if he pitches great. Ranger, 3 2/3, 5 strikeouts, 4 walks. Again, whatever. He's Ranger. He'll be good. Everybody is just so much better situated without the WBC like there was last year. Night and day, how screwed the team was entering the season last year and how well-positioned they are this year. Remember, they started like 0-5 or 1-5. They got swept in Texas. They start off 4-0. Bohm goes deep. It's like, oh, Phillies are back. This is going to be great. And then they get swept out because Nola ends up getting rocked. Story of April and May. And they get crushed in New York. And we're like, oh, this sucks. Can we start the season now? That's not going to happen this year. Everybody's much better positioned on the Phillies to enter the year. So let's do the big news of the last couple days. The White Sox trade Dylan Cease to the Padres. Star pitcher Dylan Cease, who the Braves had been rumored were going after. Listen. The Braves were held back, I think, because Acuña's somewhat pouty and comes up small in big moments. And they have this weird front-running, like, they're front-runners, which is a bad thing. They're like, I mean, to be honest, they're kind of like the Celtics. They can blow you out and run all over you and go crazy. But then when you punch back, they kind of fold sometimes. And that's what the Braves are. But they lost also in part because Bryce Elder pitched Game 3 at Citizens Bank Park and again, Bryce Elder. When once Harper took Elder deep, that series was over. I don't care how close Game 4 could have been with Kimbrel and whoever. So they need pitching, and they get Chris Sale, which kind of feels like a Harper stopper move. They get that to try to mitigate Harper. And we'll see if it works. I mean, the guy hasn't been healthy for a full season in like 7 years, and maybe this is the year. Who knows? But they were really rumored after Cease, who was one of the hot young pitchers on the market, one of the best in baseball, and he is, as I look him up again, he is currently 28 years old, and I think he has a couple years. He's not a free agent until 2026, so you're talking 3 years of control. No, 2 years of control, 24, 25, and then he's a free agent in 20, either 2 or 3 years of control, whatever, semantics, you understand. He did have a 4-5 last year, but in 2022, he was 14-8 with a 2-2. Runner-up in Cy Young. Amazing year. Had a down year, so did the entire White Sox team. But you're talking one of the better young pitchers in baseball. And instead, it's the Padres who go after him. Who like they cut payroll by getting rid of Soto. And they go after Cease, but this kind of makes sense. Because if you're going to cut payroll, and you still need to improve, and you lose Snell after last year, and you lose Hader after going all in to try to win, and the only way to really mitigate that and go around it is to trade for pitching you can control and don't have to pay yet, and Cease is that guy. They trade their number 5 prospect, number 7, number 8, and someone else. Just like 4 or 5. Like, it's a big haul, and the White Sox need to do it because they're a disaster, and they need anybody that can play. So this makes sense for the Padres. They still have talent. They still have Tatis and Bogarts and guys out there. They're in a really weird spot. And that's kind of the scare of being a small market team and doing what they did. Because they go all in with all these guys, including Snell and Hader. Then they lose, for whatever reason. They lose a lot of close games, which I will say is not entirely... I'm not going to entirely blame it on Hader. Part of it is the team and their DNA, and the ball just rolled the wrong way. I also am going to kind of blame it on Hader because I can, and I think he's a D-bag. So now he's gone, and maybe it's going to be actually addition by getting him out of that whole bullpen scene. But the Yankees missed out here. We talk about Cole going down and wondering what the hell the Yankees can do. Apparently they were really in on him, and they're not going to sign Snell, and they didn't trade for Cease. So the Yankees' plan is now becoming increasingly questionable. The AL East is looking like Baltimore's in a runaway. Baltimore gets Burns, and they're loaded, and they have all these studs coming up from the minors. And the Blue Jays are good, and the Rays are the Rays, and they're going to win games with their devil magic whatever. And the Red Sox are an embarrassment, and the Yankees are kind of in the middle. They're kind of stuck. Which is like my youth. Oh my God, the Yankees being stuck and being in a bad place is a crazy thing to think about. And that's with Soto and Judge. Now, how does this relate to the Phillies? Juan Soto's a free agent after the year. And somehow, if they lose and he's not happy, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if that does happen, and that's the scene, and the Phillies have all this money, and they don't go spend it on Snell, and they're already over all the tax thresholds, Juan Soto next offseason. Again, putting out the little breadcrumbs. I would love the Yankees thing to burn and burn spectacularly. Because if it works, I think Soto's more inclined to stay. Money talks. So does comfort and winning and all that going well. I hope it fails. I hope Boone gets fired. I hope they can't find pitching. I hope Soto hates it in New York because that place sucks. And then he comes here next offseason and we just have the 2019 Nationals with Harper, or 2018 with Harper, Turner, Soto, but also just like the coolest team ever and one that dominates everybody, but not in a loser front-running way like the Braves do. All right, that's really it for free agency. I mean, Snell and Montgomery we talked about. J.D. Martinez isn't signed, but you don't really know what his value is. He's a DH. I don't really know exactly what's going to happen with like whether teams will actually value him enough. And that's that. I just looked on Twitter, and I was beautifully reminded. Again, I don't think anybody cares, but You know, Wisconsin once lost a Big Ten tournament game 36-33. I don't know how anybody could have watched that stuff. I did. I don't know how anybody does. That has nothing to do with the Phillies, though. We will return. We'll actually get on track. And close out the show next. Some news about new jerseys. Phillies new jerseys. We'll talk about that coming up. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. All right, we're back. Ben Kenny on the clock. Couple more minutes here before we get out of here. And some semi-news-ish. Apparently the Phillies City Connects, and this is, I think, per Phillies Nation. Philly City Connects, this new jersey line that they took away our beautiful reds to put in. Remember the red tops? Game 5 in Arizona. They went out well. Wheeler dealt. Schwarber hit a bomb a million feet. Harper went deep too. The Philly City Connects are reportedly set to debut in April. And they have not officially released the jerseys. But there have been leaks. And the leaks led to intense blowback. Like, I hate the new Eagles lettering, but I can live with it. These new Phillies things, based on the city flag, which I'm from the city. I'm from Philadelphia. Couldn't tell you one thing about it. Apparently, it's blue and yellow. They are hideous. They're so far away from the actual identity of the team. And it's kind of a ploy to sell jerseys and make money, but no one's going to buy them because they're hideous. And they don't in any way relate to the Phillies. Well, reportedly, they're going to debut in April. So we get to feast our eyes. Maybe they'll release it and they're totally different. I kind of hope that's the case. I hope we bullied them into releasing something different. But who knows? All right, that's going to do it. Appreciate everyone hanging in, as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday as we are 2 weeks. It'll be 1 week next week. And then we'll talk after the opening day game as the Philly season begins. And I cannot wait, as I have clearly expressed. Cannot wait for all of that. Again, thanks for hanging out. We'll talk to you later. See ya. All right, we're back, Ben Kenny, on the clock. Couple more minutes here before we get out of here. And some semi-news-ish. Apparently, the Phillies City Connects, and this is, I think, per Phillies Nation. Philly City Connects, this new jersey line that they took away our beautiful reds to put in. Remember the red tops? Game 5 in Arizona. They went out well. Wheeler dealt. Schwarber hit a bomb a million feet. Harper went deep, too. The Philly City Connects are reportedly set to debut in April, and they have not officially released the jerseys, but there have been leaks, and the leaks led to intense blowback. Like, I hate the new Eagles lettering, but I can live with it. These new Phillies things, based on the city flag, which I'm from the city, I'm from Philadelphia, couldn't tell you one thing about it. Apparently, it's blue and yellow. They are hideous. They're so far away from the actual identity of the team. And it's kind of a ploy to sell jerseys and make money, but no one's going to buy them because they're hideous and they don't in any way relate to the Phillies. Well, reportedly, they're going to debut in April, so we get to feast our eyes. Maybe they'll release it and they're totally different. I kind of hope that's the case. I hope we bullied them into releasing something different, but who knows? All right, that's going to do it. Appreciate everyone hanging in, as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday as we are 2 weeks. It'll be 1 week next week. And then we'll talk after the opening day game as the Philly season begins. And I cannot wait, as I have clearly expressed. Cannot wait for all of that. Again, thanks for hanging out. We'll talk to you later. See ya.